Välkommen till Benchmark Live som är Strivos podcast om investeringar och sådant som påverkar investeringar. Strivo är ett bolag som tillverkar olika typer av finansiella lösningar och som har en marknadsledande plattform för rådgivet sparande. Jag som pratar heter Peter Jönsson och jobbar som sales på Strivo. Välkomna till Benchmark Live avsnitt 35. Världen måste ställa om till förnyelsebar energi. Om vi ska klara de mål som vi satt upp gällande uppvärmning av jorden. Det är liksom inte bra om vi gör det, utan vi måste göra det för att kunna bo kvar på den här planeten. För några år sedan, när vi hade minusräntor, så var fonder mot detta tema det absolut hetaste. Men när inflationen och räntorna kom tillbaka så orkade inte investerarna vänta på att bolagen skulle tjäna pengar längre, varpå en stor nedgång följde. Så frågan om detta tema är dött för alltid. Idag ska vi prata om ett undertema till förnyelsebar energi, nämligen solenergi. Och för att hjälpa oss förstå så har vi ett långväga besök av Pascal Rocha som förvaltar fonden Active Solar. Men eftersom Pascal då är från Schweiz så kommer intervjun vara på engelska. Och jag tror att det är lättare för er lyssnare att förstå engelska än vad Pascal har för att förstå svenska. Men innan vi tar in Pascal så ska vi prata lite snabbt med det bolag som introducerar Active Solar i Norden. Och därför hälsar vi Erik Brundin från Intervalor välkommen. Kul att ha dig här, Erik.
Stort tack, Peter. Roligt att vara här.
Och välkommen till ett soligt Göteborg.
Ja, eller hur? Alltid soligt Göteborg.
Jag hörde att det var mycket sämre väder i Stockholm och det glädjer mig.
Ja, samma här. Samma här.
Du kan väl berätta lite om Intervalor och vad er uppgift är i det här samarbetet?
Ja, absolut. För att vi på Intervalor, vi skiljer oss nämligen en hel del från de gästerna du kanske vanligtvis brukar ha här i studion. Och med det menar jag att vi själva inte är ett fondbolag. Vi är själva inte några förvaltare, utan vi representerar istället några få utvalda internationella kapitalförvaltare på exklusiv basis i Norden. Så det Intervalor gör att vi screenar den globala fondmarknaden, vi identifierar och i förlängningen introducerar framstående och kvalitativa förvaltare till den nordiska fondmarknaden. Och här har vi haft nöjet, ska jag säga, att etablera flera av de större internationella förvaltarhusen till Norden. Du kanske känner till Franklin Templeton och Pitke Asset Management då, för att nämna ett par stycken. Och sedan arbetar vi även med mer specialiserade fondbolag och nischade strategier som Active Niche Fund och Active Solar, som är ett mycket bra exempel på det. Och partnerskapet med Active Niche Funds ingick vi i den senare delen av 2021 för att just leda deras distribution och tillväxt in i Norden. Och det här såklart sammanfaller, tycker jag, under en oerhört intressant tillfälle för nordiska investerare, där solenergisektorn präglas av rekordstark tillväxt globalt. Men allt det där egentligen hade jag tänkt att låta dig och Pascal tala vidare om. Men det är så Intervalor och Active Niche Funds hänger ihop.
Nej, men spännande. Kul att ha en sån oberoende introducerarfirma.
Ja, precis. Inte alls biased.
Kan välja liksom lite vad de vill, tycker jag, ska marknadsföras i Sverige egentligen.
Precis, och vi försöker hela tiden arbeta med liksom unika produkter. Vi vill gärna komma in och göra något som inte andra gör, så att vi vill hela tiden ha en väldigt attraktiv produktportfölj egentligen. Så ja, jätteroligt.
Kul. Nu vill jag snacka med Pascal.
Ja, självklart.
So, welcome to Benchmark Live, Pascal. Good to have you in Sweden and good to have you here at Strivo. And you brought the sun with you from southern Europe. Not southern maybe, but more south than Sweden anyways.
Hello, Peter. Thank you for having me on the webcast. And yes, it's definitely a good day to talk about solar.
Today is a good day for output, I can presume, yeah?
Absolutely.
So let's start talking about you, what your background is and how you became the fund manager of Active Solar.
I used to be working in the utility business. Actually, I was a chief risk officer of one of the largest utilities in Switzerland up to 2007. And at that time, I got the feeling that solar was going to change the world of energy, so to say. So I told to myself, well, I really need to launch a fund on the solar sector. I did it in 2008. And I'm still here today, so with roughly 15 years of track record. But I must tell you that 2008 was roughly 10 years too early because it was only the very beginning of the industry. The market was very small. The solar market was subsidized, etc., etc. So we started roughly 10 years too early, and that shows as well into the performance. The good thing is we now have a deep knowledge of the industry and the longest standing expertise on this sector as well.
I can also imagine 2008 was not the most risk appetite to launch a fund start, right? Because of the global financial crisis?
Yes, it was very difficult, especially that we launched the fund on the exact day where Lehman went bankrupt. And
really?
Yes, 15th of September 2008. And we just had enough time to invest the full portfolio in 3 weeks. And the financial crash came on week four. So that was an awful start. Mm. But I mean, we managed to survive. And now we're super happy to have this long-standing expertise on the solar industry.
And the fund company, how large is it in terms of assets under management?
We manage roughly 400 million USD, and half of that is into the solar fund. Mm-hmm. So the solar fund is really the one that made me launch the company 15 years ago, and it is still the main fund of the company.
Okay, yep. So let's start with the overall picture. Why is renewables an interesting investment theme?
It seems kind of obvious, right? I mean, we are into a world now where it's obvious that we would like to do something to combat climate change. And obviously, the biggest polluter is energy, especially electricity generation that accounts for roughly 40% of CO2 emission.
Globally?
Yes, globally, worldwide. So now there's a big consensus that the only way to go around this is to transform the way we produce electricity. So we're moving from a world where today still roughly 60% of world electricity is being generated by fossil fuels, 35% coal, 25% gas, and only 30% renewables. We're moving towards 60% renewables by 2030 already. So it's going very fast, and we are currently at the heart of the energy transition.
When you look at the stock performance of this sector for the last couple of years, say 2-3 years, it hasn't really been super fun for the investor, maybe, because when the rates and inflation came back, it seemed like the renewable stock fell down quite a bit, since the profits maybe weren't there and they were quite expensive companies, like many of the small unprofitable tech companies. Is that a correct guess from my part?
More or less. I mean, there was a big run in 2020, so the COVID year, and this was mostly driven by many countries investing billion into the economy, and part of it went into the energy transition. So, for example, our fund in 2020 returned the best performance worldwide across all asset classes with plus
183%. 183%?
Yes, exactly. So more or less multiplied by three in 2020.
Wow.
So, of course, when stocks go up like that, I mean, everybody understands at a point you need a consolidation. Mm-hmm. So I would say there was first a phase of consolidation 2021-2022 that was absolutely logical, but then there was a bad year, and that was last year, and for several reasons we might go back into that later. And it is true that to some extent interest rates going up played a role into that, because as you know, many investors worldwide decided that as interest rates go up, they do not want to invest in long-term infrastructure, so to say. Yes,
yeah.
So it did have a significant impact on the behavior of investors towards this kind of investment, I would say.
Yeah, like long duration bonds fell and long duration stocks fell as well, right?
Exactly.
But the underlying industry, is it that no one is building solar energy or like that anymore? Or is it still growing, the industry, just the stock price is down?
Yeah, just the stock prices is down. If you look at the industry, at the market, I mean, it's flourishing, it's growing more than ever. So just to give you a little bit of data, last year, between 2020 and 2023, worldwide solar market was multiplied by three. So last year, there was...
Between 2020 and 2023,
multiplied by three. Wow. What does it mean? When last year, worldwide, there was 450 gigawatts of new solar installation. It's a lot. Actually, all the panels installed last year, they are enough to power a country like Germany. Oh. So it's like adding German power consumption on the map in a single year in terms of solar panels. Mm. And actually, very few people are aware of that. But if you look across the power sector, if you look at every new power facility installed in the year in the world every year, well, solar is roughly 60% of that. So 60% of every new power capacity worldwide is being solar in terms of new installation.
And that is total energy production, both nuclear and solar and water and wind and everything. So 60% is solar.
Yes, exactly. I'm talking globally, roughly 60% of everything new is solar, 20% is wind, and you still have a little bit of addition in coal and gas. But of course, this is going to stop very soon. As I mentioned earlier, we are at the heart of the energy transition, where globally renewables that account now for 30% of world electricity generation will move to 60% by 2030. And of course, on the other side, you've got fossil fuel generation with gas and coal, 60% today, dropping to roughly 30% by 2030. Mm. And 2030 is very soon on the scale of the energy business.
I just wonder, who is building coal plants nowadays? Isn't that like too late, so to speak?
I will say hardly anybody, but a little bit in China and India. But you need to understand that these economies are growing a lot. They are also the one, especially the Chinese, putting on the most solar plants. Okay. But sometimes they still need a little bit more electricity. And there's another thing here. A lot of these new coal plants are more modern than some of the old ones that are getting retired. Yeah. But clearly, in the next 5 years, the net new coal plants is going to be very negative, because coal is now expected to drop from 35% of world electricity generation today to roughly 15%, 1.5, in 6 years only. Hmm. So it's going very fast.
Yeah. And also, the total energy consumption, I believe, will grow. So,
yes, and that's also consensual, because as you probably know, in order to decarbonize the economy, we must electrify the economy, yeah. Meaning using electricity as much as we can for almost everything. So on one hand, obviously, everybody knows that electricity is going to be used for transportation. So that's why oil could possibly go away or be strongly diminished. And on the other side, electricity is also going to be used for heating. Today, there is a big part of heating that is being made with coal and gas, and this is going to be going away as well, because heating is going to be electrified mainly through heat pumps. Mm-hmm. So we're heading towards a world that is going to be with a much higher rate of electrification. Today, if you look at global energy consumption in the world, electricity is roughly 20%, only 20%. And according to any kind of scenarios, in 20 years from now, it should be over 50%. So definitely, the demand in electricity is going to be in the range of 2 to 3 times bigger than today.
Mm. Yeah. When it comes to the stock prices, do you think this is like the bottom? or do you think there's still more downside risk from here?
Okay, talking about solar specifically, there is a good chance we are bottoming up. And to understand why I'm saying that, I should talk a little bit on why the stocks went down last year. Mm-hmm. Last year, the stocks went down in the range of -30%, so it was very disappointing, as opposed to worldwide stock markets that did pretty well.
Yeah.
So last summer, there were two fears that came into the industry. First, too much manufacturing of solar panels in China, so overcapacity in manufacturing, that was putting pressure on sales prices of solar panels. Mm-hmm. And second, too much inventory in distribution channels in Europe and the USA. So these two things...
Excuse me, a follow-up question there. So that might be because the rates for private consumption increased. So they can't like buy solar panels on their villas and houses. So cheaply, or?
Yeah, no, it's not the case, actually. It's because it was difficult for distribution companies, so the one installing panels in the rooftops at your house or my house, it was difficult for them to get delivered in 2021 and 2022.
Yeah, okay.
So that's why they decided to order as much as they could. But then the market became much more loose in 2023, so it was easy to get delivered. That's why they decided to decrease inventory. So that's the only reason. Yeah. So these two things together, fear of impact of overcapacity in manufacturing, plus inventory glut in distribution channels, made investors fearful. And actually, there was a sudden sell-off, almost like a crash on the solar stocks over the 3 months from August to October. And now, and we already told our investors that before, listen, there's no crisis in the industry and most of the companies are still doing very well, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, you can only tell if you do not have any proof. I mean, it's hard to prove. But today we have the data because most companies did report Q4 financial results.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we definitely know that there is absolutely zero crisis in the industry. Pretty much every company is returning a profit. And the one that have seen profit go down in Q3 and Q4 last year, well, profits will start to go back up again at the latest by the second half of this year. So that is why we expect this year, after a panicking phase in the second semester last year, that investors will start again to look at the companies, to look at the financial statements, to look at the growth, to look at the profits, and start buy again.
And there are so many different renewables. Why solar? Why not something else?
Well, there are two others we should speak of. I mean, basically wind, of course, and wind also is a big part of the energy transition. But as you know, I mean, one of the disadvantages of wind is you cannot put it everywhere. I mean, you need to put it in a very windy place and away from houses. And that's opposite to solar, where you can put basically solar panels everywhere on rooftops or on the land. But definitely wind is going to be a big part. And in every scenario of the International Energy Agency, wind is going to be almost as big as solar in the future. So if I'm talking 2030, you've got solar moving from 6% of world electricity generation last year to 21%, and you've got wind moving from 8% last year to 19%. And then if you look further in the future, I mean, we could as well live in a world where almost half of electricity is generated by solar and 30% by wind. And the other renewable source you might be thinking of is hydro. So hydro is working very well. The problem with hydro, if you look at developed countries, I mean, we've already built pretty much what we could. So it's very difficult to increase capacities, but of course there are still lots of opportunities in developing countries.
But I mean, all energy sources have limitations, right? So you said that windmills need wind, and hydro needs big sources of water, but the sun needs, the solar needs sun, right? And the sun isn't up all day round. So do you think we need a mix of everything? Or so again, why the focus on solar?
Of course, there will always be a mix. But I think your question is mainly around how is it going to work with intermittent power generation?
And intermittent is a hard word in English for me. Do you mean batteries or storage, or what is intermittent?
Intermittent, fluctuating. So, I mean, as you said, solar during the day, wind when it's windy. Mm-hmm. And of course, we need to manage the grid. And the grid needs to be balanced not only on a daily basis, but on a every second, right? So how do you do that when the source of electricity generation are intermittent? Well, there are many parts to the answer. The first part is we need a bit more storage. We mentioned hydro before. Well, hydro is one kind of storage that does already exist with the big dams, where you can sometimes pump up the water back into the dam. So the dams are the most efficient batteries that we know. And obviously, now we have proper batteries coming online, and batteries are becoming much cheaper and cheaper, and also very efficient. So actually, if you look at solar installation worldwide today, there's roughly half of them, the new one, that are coupled with batteries. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the answer. The other part is looking at the full transformation of the world of energy. As I mentioned earlier, we're heading towards an economy that is going to be more and more electrified. So when you use electricity not only for the grid, but for other things like charging your vehicles, like heating your house, mm-hmm. or like transforming power into hydrogen, and hydrogen that you can use later for, I don't know, transforming into jet fuel for the plane, or transform it back into power. Well, when you have all these things that run or need electricity, then you can use more electricity when there is more and less when there is less, meaning there won't be only the grid, and it's how it's supposed to work.
In Sweden, the grid is not super good, I think, at least from reading the newspapers, because we have a lot of power production up in the north with hydro, and then most of the like industries and people live here in the south. Is that a problem all over Europe, or is it just a problem in Sweden? And in that case, solar is really good because you can place solar almost anywhere, right? So even if the grid is not perfect in the country, you can place solar where you need the electricity, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the story of solar is a story of decentralization of power generation. So everybody can and should power its own electricity. But the grid issue is pretty much a worldwide issue. So it is true in Europe, it is true in the USA. You cannot change an electricity system that used to be working with big size, centralized generation with gas, coal, and nuclear. You cannot transform it overnight into decentralized network without impact on the grid. Mm. So you need two things. You need to change and adapt the grid in order to transform it into what we call a smart grid, basically a grid that allows also people to produce electricity, mm-hmm. and sometimes push it back into the grid. And second, we need more grid, better interconnection, et cetera, et cetera. So of course, that's part of the story. And almost on every continent where you look at Europe, USA, Asia, China, et cetera, where there are very big investments that are being currently made in the grids and that will be made in the next 20 years. So that's definitely part of the story.
Yeah. From what I understand, the cost of producing solar energy has dropped quite significantly over the last decade. Is that true or?
It's absolutely true. It's the main reason why solar is now the big driver of the energy transition. So the cost of generating electricity with solar was more or less divided by 10 over 10 years. So it means it dropped from roughly $400 per megawatt hours to 40. And $40 per megawatt hours means 4 cents per kilowatt hours. I'm talking cents per kilowatt hours because if you look at your electricity bills, everything is in kilowatt hours.
Yeah.
And 4 cents per kilowatt hours is true in most countries on average worldwide. And it is the cheapest source of electricity now in most countries as well. So the best wind farm would generate electricity in the same range of prices, 4 to 5 cents. And then you've got gas. I would say gas is the biggest competitor. Gas is mostly generating in the range of 7-8 cents, so almost twice as expensive. Coal, even more expensive, in the range of 10-12 cents. And nuclear, I don't even talk about it, in the range of 18-20 cents. So solar is now clearly the cheapest source of electricity.
That's incredible. Why has the solar cost come down 90% from the top? Is it like only technical innovation, or is it cheaper raw materials, or do you know?
The main reason is size. The solar market was multiplied by 100 over the last 15 years. So it
like
means
installed capacity?
No. Like, how much solar panels we installed every year. So I said last year 450 gigawatts. Mm-hmm. 15 years ago, it was in the range of 3, 4, 5 gigawatts per year. So everything is 100 times bigger, meaning manufacturing capacities are 100 times bigger. So imagine how much savings you can do when you produce 100 times more. But of course, it also had an impact of everything around the value chain. And the main component that you need to produce a solar panel is polysilicon. I will explain what it is. The price of polysilicon used to be in the range of $400-$500 per kilo in 2008, and now it's $9. So obviously, the main component got divided by 50.
Yeah.
That is very significant. And I guess one thing you should know is that polysilicon, sometimes when you read analyst reports, you get the impression polysilicon is a raw material. Well, that is false. Polysilicon is just the transformed raw material. The raw material is quartz sand. So it's a kind of sand that's available everywhere on Earth, roughly one third of the Earth's crust. So we have it in unlimited quantities, and it costs almost nothing. But you need to refine this sand in a high purity, very high purity manner in order to transform it into polysilicon that is used to make solar panels.
So, okay, wow. It seems like there's really big shifts going on, like from 5 to 500 megawatt hours installed capacity every year, and from 500 to 5 with cost of this, I don't even remember the name. It was
polysilicon.
Polysilicon, yeah. That's incredible. When will be the year? Because I have a villa and I'm thinking about maybe installing solar panels on the roof, but I think they're too ugly, to be frank. So when do you think it's the cost of installments and like the efficiency of the panels and the looks of the panels are so good that almost all houses that are newly built or even old ones have solar panels on the roof. Is it like 1 year back to there, or is it like 20 years?
No, it's today. It's today. Well, I mean, of course, yes. It depends where you look, but I mean, you've got all kinds of possibilities. Of course, putting solar panels on a house that has got already a roof, I mean, it's not the nicest thing, I could agree. So the better thing, obviously, is when you build a new house, well, you don't put tiles. The solar panels are replacing the tiles. So you can go for the very expensive and fancy way and have some tiles that will generate electricity, but that's only a very, very niche part of the market. Or you can go for the mainstream, which is basically solar integrated into the roof. So you would have a slick roof of solar panel that is all looking nicely the same, and it's exactly what I have in my house in Lausanne. On one side it's slick, all solar panels, even fake ones to fill up the small holes. Yes. So it's all slick. And on the northern part, well, it's tiles. So it's how it's supposed to be. And definitely the technology is here today to make it look nice. And not only nice, but competitive for everybody, including in Sweden. But obviously a solar panel will generate less electricity in Sweden than in Madrid, but it's still competitive.
Okay, let's talk about your fund. So what kind of universe do you invest in? Is it global or European focus, or how do you like start when choosing companies?
We invest globally, so worldwide throughout the value chain of solar photovoltaics.
So the whole value chain, yeah?
The whole value chain. So it's not only manufacturing solar panels, but it is also installing. It is also owning and operating solar plants, plus everything else that you need for a solar installation. So one of the machines that is absolutely needed is an inverter. I think in Swedish it's something like transformator. And it's absolutely needed for every solar installation. So it's a machine that transforms the electricity that comes out of the panel that is continuous current into alternative current. It's a machine that does the integration from the solar installation with the grid. And then you've got other kind of equipments. I could mention the trackers. A tracker is a machine that allows the panel to follow the sun when you have some large utility scale installation when they are put on the ground, etc., etc.
So they move according to where the sun
is. Would follow the sun. So we have a large range of companies, very diversified. And currently, if you look at our portfolio, there's only roughly 25% of the portfolio on the upstream, meaning on the companies manufacturing the solar panels. Only 25%.
Okay. And the other 75 is mainly what kind of companies?
It's installing, and then you've got owning and operating the plants, you've got inverter manufacturing, you've got tracker companies, you've got glass companies, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, and so upstream you mean before...
Before installing.
Before electricity is generated.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
And so then you've got the whole universe worldwide. It's a bit more than 100 companies listed on the stock exchange because we only invest in listed companies. And then we have... straightforward process in order to select the companies. It's a mix of top down. Naturally, it's our global understanding of the solar sector plus the assessment of the technologies. And we do that with one of the top scientists in Europe. His name is Professor Christoph Baif, based in Switzerland. And so that's a top-down, then we've got the bottom-up, and that's logically all the financial models that we built on the industry. And we put all that together, and then we decide according to the risk-return profile of each company what kind of weight we would like to give a company into the portfolio.
Okay. And when it comes to size, how large are the companies you invest in? Are they small cap or large cap or...
They are larger than most investors believe, actually. The average in the portfolio right now is around $8 billion.
Okay.
So most of our companies are between 1 and 10 billion. Roughly 60, 70% of the portfolio is between 1 and 10 billion. And 25 to 35% over 10 billion market capitalization. We might only have one or two companies just slightly below 1 billion. So we do not have any small companies anymore. And most importantly, the liquidity of these stocks is high. So we do not have any issue in order to manage the daily liquidity of our active solar portfolio.
Which is the world's largest company in this area? Is it Solar City or is it some Chinese or?
Yeah, the largest now are the Chinese solar manufacturers. Some have a market capitalization quite bigger than 10 or sometimes 20 billion.
Okay. Yeah, so that's big. When it comes to valuations of these companies, are they cheap or are they? I mean, their growth prospects are quite fantastic, right? So I presume they're not super cheap. They're more priced like maybe tech companies that can grow.
Not at all. They've never been so cheap.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's a reality. It's because of the downturn of last year. So if I might just come back to what happened last year. So there were some fears. I explained that earlier. And there was a panic in the solar market, I mean, among investors. And as most investors are not sophisticated, if you have a good reason to sell one or two solar stocks, they would not distinguish and sell everything solar. So it's what happened last year. So we had some companies increasing significantly revenues and profit last year, but stocks went down massively. So it was a broad sell-off. And now the result of that is that our stocks have never been so cheap. And I will give you the data coming from Bloomberg, actually the analyst consensus on Bloomberg. Well, today it says for our portfolio, you're paying 14 times the profit of this year and only 11 times next year. We even think this is cheaper than that, because currently Bloomberg expectations are way too low. It's kind of logical because of the sell-off last year. Analysts were wrong, so then they heavily corrected on the downside. And now they will, and they are in process of upgrading the stocks again. So in our opinion, we are currently paying no more than 12 times the profit of this year. So it's super cheap. It's never been so cheap for the solar industry, and it's obviously nothing to compare with the tech industry.
I totally agree. NVIDIA is like 65 times earnings, and Tesla is, I don't know, a lot.
Hundreds.
So this is really, I think it's cheap, actually. I thought it would be much more expensive.
And every company is returning a profit. If you look at our portfolio, every company but one. So it's also good for investors to understand that it is definitely not only a growing industry, but also a profitable industry. Mm. And profits are also going to be made for investors in the future. Of course, short term, you have some eccentric, I would say, market behavior like we've had last year. Because markets, unfortunately, are not efficient, as you know.
But not short term, but long term.
Yeah, long term they are. So it does create some opportunities. And that is why we believe stepping into a solar investment today is probably a very good idea when you will look at it 2-3 years ahead from now.
and so like 11-12 PE, but the growth rate is much be, I think it's more than 11-12% a year, right?
Oh yes, I mean last year we had companies growing plus 30, 50, sometimes 70%. So this year the growth that we are expecting is at least plus 30%. So that's for the market growth. So moving from 450 gigawatt of new installation last year to at least 580, 600 gigawatts. So that's for the market growth, and the market growth will translate into revenue growth because prices have stabilized. So more or less, you will see the same growth in revenues, and you will see a little bit less growth in profits because some part of the value chain, they are still suffering, I would say, of lower margins that they used to have 2 years ago. But it still means we are expecting a double-digit growth of profit this year. So that's why the valuations in the low tens are really appealing.
I mean, if you have 11 PE and a growth above 22%, you have a PEG ratio of over 2, which is, I must say, quite incredible, right?
Yeah, I don't need to be convinced, but you know, the market is the market and investors' behavior is not always logical. So of course, for us, over the last 9 months, it was not funny because you've got a fund that does underperform the market. So you need to explain and try and keep all your investors. But now, of course, that we see that the turnaround is definitely coming, and maybe we have seen the lows 2 weeks ago. We already plus 10% from the lows. So now that we see that, we are definitely very enthusiastic about speaking to new investors and telling them, hey, look, there might be almost once in a lifetime opportunity to invest now.
Yeah. What's your most, like, if you could name three companies that you own, what's like your largest allocation? What is your fastest growing company? And what company that you own has the most frontier technology?
Yeah, well, you know, as a fund manager, I usually don't like to talk about specific stocks, but I will.
Yeah.
But it should not give you and your listeners ideas to buy these stocks.
Yeah.
Because you should never forget that buying a single stock or two stocks is highly risky. I mean, these solar stocks, they are very volatile, etc. So I do not recommend to buy single stocks. And it's not only because I'm talking for my fund. So the largest allocation currently, doesn't mean much to us because we have actually a top five and it's moving around on a daily basis. Okay. But I could mention First Solar. First Solar is the only large-scale solar manufacturer that is American. It's also the only company that has got a technology different from the mainstream technology made with polysilicon that I mentioned earlier.
Okay.
So they are doing very well, but I must tell you, they are also doing very well because they are protected by the US protectionism, so to say, and they take full advantage of the Inflation Reduction Act. And you might know that Inflation Reduction Act has got nothing to do with inflation, but is actually the largest renewable package that was voted 2 years ago in the USA. So First Solar manufactures solar panels in the US and mostly sells in the USA. Is a company doing very well, and they have pretty much sold out all the manufacturing capacity in the next 2 to 3 years. So it's kind of a low risk bet. If you look maybe at the fastest growing company I could name, SMA Solar is a German manufacturer of inverter. Last year, they managed to grow revenues plus 75% as they managed to multiply profits by 4. It did not help the stock that was divided by 2. So
Once again, I'm
referring. Nah, I mean, there is a sell-off, you know, sell solar. You don't look at the figures, as I said before. So of course it leads to big opportunities. Well, this company is a very good company. Of course, it's not going to keep going with such a high growth rate, but it's just one example of what's possible in a single year. And you asked me about a company that has got frontier technology. Well, the technology is pretty much available to everybody who would like to invest a couple of billion. But then it's how you are able to deliver, how you able to manufacture. But of course, you still need to have a good research and development team in order to improve always a little bit and to be among the best ones. So a company I could name that is also among the top five holding of the portfolio is Jinko Solar. It's a Chinese company that's actually the largest solar manufacturer in the world. Okay. Then there's just Chinese, but it's also a multinational. They are selling in every part of the world, and they are also manufacturing outside China, including in the USA.
Okay. We haven't spoken about that, but you said the Inflation Act isn't really about inflation. It's more about the energy transition in the States. And I think that may be because of Russia, right? Because before Russia, we were kind of friends. I mean, Russia-Ukraine situation, of course. Before that, we were kind of friends, and we were kind of okay buying cheap gas and oil from Russia. And then suddenly, they invaded Ukraine. And we said, of course, we don't want to do business with you guys. And that's might be why like the renewables are getting... Because then you have control over your own power generation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the war in Ukraine was probably the last wake-up call for politicians worldwide, and not only in Europe, to understand that it's not a very good idea to be dependable on your neighbors because for energy, because you never know what's going to happen with the neighbors. And definitely, I mean, as you know, I mean, the war in Ukraine triggered an energy crisis in Europe, and it did significantly accelerate the energy transition in Europe. So actually, the latest data on the European Union was released only a couple of weeks ago. And I can tell you that last year, renewables generated 44% of EU electricity versus one third from fossil fuel and a bit more than 20% from nuclear. So 44% from less than 40% 1 year ago. So it's moving very fast. Solar is already 9% of EU electricity and wind 18%. And it's moving very fast. So most probably in the next 3 to 5 years, you will only have roughly 20% left being generated by fossil fuels, so coal and gas, and renewables altogether will be 60% in Europe.
I'm just thinking about, I have some customers interested in the defense industry, but maybe solar is a better way to invest in your independence than investing in weaponry.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, some politicians picked up exactly that theme in Europe because they said, well, energy security now equals national security. Of course, you don't want to be dependable on neighbors for energy. And that is clearly the future of energy. And thanks to renewables, solar and wind, most countries are going to be fully independent in the next 10 years.
I think we're going to have a lot less wars then. Because if you think about it, the last like 50 years, a lot of wars has been about oil, right?
It's absolutely true. I mean, lots of wars were linked to energy.
And commodities.
And so I'm not that optimistic as you are, because there will be some other reasons for war. will have to do with other kind of wealth, I guess. Maybe raw materials or commodity. Yeah, I don't know. But for energy, definitely the world map is going to change massively in the next 10 years already, because as you know, a lot of countries became rich and powerful because of oil and fossil fuels in general. And so they won't be able to rely on that in the next 10 to 20 years. So definitely the world map is going to change with significant geopolitical impact.
Yeah, I agree. We mentioned it before, but the fund is Article 9. What does that mean for like the retail investor that only sees the number Article 9?
Article 9 is the highest level of classification within the European, that's called SFDR regulation. So what does it mean? Well, it means active solar has got a sustainable environmental objective. And actually, the objective of active solar is climate change mitigation. I mentioned earlier, I mean, when you generate electricity with solar, you decarbonize. So it's kind of logical. So it means the highest level of sustainability requirements and also disclosure within the European framework regulation. And you should know that there is only a very small portion of all the financial vehicles available on the market that are Article 9. We're talking 3 to 4%. So it's kind of difficult to be Article 9, but active solar is definitely very comfortable within the SFDR Article 9 regulation because our company, they do mainly two things. They either generate renewable electricity or manufacture things or provide services in order to generate green electricity. So, you know, it fits very well into the regulation.
Yeah, one of the greenest funds in the world, so to speak.
Yeah, I could say that, absolutely, yes. And it's a pure exposure, and that's probably a big advantage if you look at it from now and looking into the future, because it gives investors the opportunity to have a clean exposure on the solar industry. But of course, in the past, when solar was very small and not competitive, etc., it was, on the contrary, a disadvantage. But now we are in a new world where energy transition is definitely not only meaning something, but it has become a strong consensus within the energy sector that we are moving towards a highly renewable world.
Wonderful. I think I've got some information about the solar industry that I did not know before. And do you see that there's something that we missed talking about?
I think we talked about pretty much everything, but I would like, as a conclusion, I would like to say there is a big investment opportunity because most of what I explained today is just hard data. It's just the situation of what's happening today in the world. But most of that is not known of or broadly known yet among investors' community, right?
Yeah.
So it means investors, I would say, in the next 3 to 5 years, and I'm talking globally, institutional investors, big ones, etc., and also individual investors. Investors will wake up to the reality of the world of energy changing, transforming at a very high pace. So we are heading into a world that is going to be already very different in 6 years from now, in 2030, and it's leading to very interesting investment opportunities.
I totally agree. The thing that surprised me most is that it's really cheap. So if you combine cheap companies that make money and also grow at a really fast pace, I think you have my money, so to speak.
Thank you. We're not taking direct investment, but you are able to buy our funds throughout, of course, Strivo platform and many other places on the market.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Pascal, for coming to Sweden and talking about your fund.
Thank you very much, Peter, for having me on the podcast.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Och till er alla ute, tack så mycket för att ni lyssnade. Ha en fortsatt härlig dag. Det du hört i denna podcast ska inte ses som rådgivning rörande finansiella placeringar eller investeringar, bokförings-, skatte- eller juridiska frågor. Du ska inte basera dina investeringsbeslut på det som framkommer till podcasten. Kontakta alltid din rådgivare för att bedöma om en placering eller investering är lämplig för dig.